This week on RSPB Update, Quest Week returns with Requiem for a Dragon. We discuss the mystery of Vorkath and Ungale with ties to Blackstone, Zautak, and ancient necromantic rituals. Meanwhile, we're forced to ask, is Bilronk really dead? And what does that mean for the story going forward? This is RSPB Update, episode 983, recorded Thursday, April 25th, 2024, Mystery for a Dragon. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSPB Update Quest Week around these parts. Tanis, welcome.
Dane.
Good to have you here. Also, of course, the usual Quest Week panel for Requiem for a Dragon. Avernick, welcome. Thanks for being here again.
Absolutely.
And, of course, Zerdones, a resident client quester as well. Good to have you here with us.
Always good to be here.
Yeah, I feel like these Quest Weeks are always a time where we can kind of, you know, just come together and sit and talk about lore and do a mini lore diggers on, well, whatever the quest might be. So,
what is it? A little bit.
It's going to be a fun one this week, folks. It really is, because this quest does so many things in terms of the story of where we're at and where we're headed in the future, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But before we begin, I just want to thank our experienced tier Patreon members for supporting the podcast and doing a great deal for us this week. That's Amos Reed, Andrew C, Drama Free, Jason S, Jesse W, Keski, Ricky A, Rippeth, Runestar, and the Naked Captain. Big, huge thank you to everybody on that list, and you'll be hearing more about our Patreon offerings a little bit later in the podcast. In the meantime, if you want to follow along, full show notes over at update.show. We do have a community Discord at update.show/discord, and the friends chat can be found at Bits Bytes. I am Shane12088. In game, Tanis can be found at Tanis79, and Avernick and Zerdones are just at their usual RSNs and don't have any special numbers or weird names associated with them. No.
I mean, you say no weird names, but come on.
Yeah. I don't think we ever got the story on Zerdones, but I mean, we'll save that for another day. But spoiler warning as we head into this, of course, because looking at this, we're going to be unveiling exactly what happens in Requiem for a Dragon. So if you've not done the quest or you don't want to be spoiled, you can probably hit the pause button, go do the quest, and come back, and we'll be here right when you begin on that. So I'm going to start off by just doing a brief summary of what we uncovered and what we've learned in this quest, because I feel like one of the things that we do best with these quest weeks is we always talk about what happened in the quest and the biggest plot points, but we don't necessarily provide the brief story summary of where we started and where we ended. So that's what this is. And if you look at Requiem for a Dragon, this is continuing the storyline after Battle of 4 and 3 that saw us break Zamarigal's control of Vorkath. We pick this up by heading to Ungale to find Vorkath near death, and there's some interesting dialogue options and things you can do with Vorkath associated with that. But in that, we uncover the history of how Vorkath was created and his original purpose, in particular, the purpose to hate and destroy humans. We also find some fun tidbits along the way around Dragonkin lore and some mysterious forces that might be in play, which we'll be discussing later on in the podcast, including everybody's big favorite magical entity that they want to be pulling the strings and make an appearance. After consulting with
save them.
What was that?
Do you really think you can save them?
Some good ASMR.
Absolutely, absolutely. And after consulting with Zamarigal, who of course blames Vorkath's corruption for the reason they didn't win the Battle of 4 and 3, our goal going forward is one about cleansing that corruption and allowing Vorkath to pass on into the afterlife and arrive in the City of We also, of course, learn through all this and have it confirmed that Moya is looking to consolidate her power even more. And we also even learn that there's a very old power stored on Ungale that she's interested in. So to help Vorkath pass into we uncover a ritual that was developed by the Guardian of Gothics named Misolionar. Is that how you guys would pronounce that? Misolionar?
Misolionar?
Oh, I would have pronounced it Misolionar.
Oh, boy.
Ooh, Salionar. Interesting.
In any case, in any case, Misolionar was known, otherwise known as Raziel. And this is where your experience in Tombs of the Warlock comes in. It was implied there, but this is the confirmation of that. We then head out on an archaeological hunt to put together a soul beacon that can be used to perform a ritual both in and on Ungale. And as we complete the ritual on Ungale, Vengeance, Bilrock, and more Zamorakian scouts appear with the goal of harvesting Vorkath's corruption for their own nefarious purposes. And we'll be delving into just how Vorkath got there, or rather, how Bilrock got there, and what this means for the future of the ongoing storyline in the episode. And of course, following this, we return to defeated since it looks like Vorkath was killed. But at the end of the day, we find out that we were successful. And that's your quick 3-minute rundown of what happened in Requiem for a Dragon. So where do you guys want to start with this? You guys all have fun with the quest this week?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good... I will confess, like, in preparation for this show, I went back and I listened to some of the last quest weeks that we've done. And as much as I've enjoyed them, I do feel like they've been light quests and not really furthering the story, not going into the lore. So in that sense, this was a really welcome change of pace.
Absolutely. I feel like this is probably the biggest quest since Succession.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Probably without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely felt like a big kick in the rear to the storyline to shift up a couple of years.
Yes.
Yeah. Now,
go ahead, Tannis, and then I'll say what I was going to say.
I like what you said about it continuing the story, because that was one of my tiny little, your famous word, Shane, niggles, that I still think the battle of Fort 4 and 3 was more of a finale than this is for that storyline, but this is a wonderful quest that pulls in a bunch of different stories, right?
And that goes into what I was going to say. Remember, there was supposed to be no quest for Vorkath. There was supposed to be no Battle of 4 and 3 quest. That was something the devs added on because they found the passion in it and wanted to just add that extra cherry on the top. We got double the amount of quests out of 4 and 3 last year than we were supposed to, than were originally planned. We learned that just a couple weeks back.
Yeah, the smaller ones attached to updates that had other headlines.
Yeah. And that's the thing I think everybody felt with the 4 and 3 storyline, is that it was, you know, just very, the writing's on the wall through it and you could see it, and we were just really observing the entire thing. And our character really wasn't, you know, playing the role that we expect them to throughout those quests, I think. I think that's a good way of summarizing what we had in Battle of 4 and 3 and the subsequent quests that came before it. Whereas this one, I feel like we're so back, as people love to say,
we're so back
on that push of, you know, doing actual quests.
And I feel like where this quest sits, like, requirement wise, it also kind of like signifies that, like, if you go up to from New Foundations to Battle of Furin 3, there's not very much friction there. It's like a couple construction levels here, a couple necromancy levels there, but it's not requiring anything else. Yeah. You could do that whole line pretty quickly. And then there's a huge gap from that to this one, where you have to do Tomes of the Warlock, which has 86 archaeology and 75 necromancy and a whole other quest series and all the souls. So like there's a kind of a break there where you could do that first chunk, that first arc, and feel pretty like complete. Like you take it from building the fort to the fort gets attacked and you save the day. And now this is kind of like the bridging to what's builds off of that. But later on in the player's journey, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I don't know what the rationale was behind the 4 and 3 stuff, because I feel like maybe that was a bit of an experiment to see if they could get more people interested in questing and bring them along for the storyline. because this is a very traditional quest, both in terms of how it carries itself and what happens in it, to the point where, you know, it's got the usual little bits of combat, it's got the lore books, it's got the lore discussions on it, whereas the other stuff was just, you know, dare I say it, stereotypical fetch quests that you'd see in some of the other MMOs, with the exception of, you know, probably Murder on the Border and the huge reveal for the Raptor. Those were probably the two big things that came out of those ones.
And those were probably the quests that were originally scoped to be quests.
Right. Right.
Yeah. In the original production schedule.
And then Necromancy came along. And then
Necromancy came along.
Right. And that's another thing. We were all wondering about how that was going to tie in. Well, you know, there's a very clear Necromancy tie-in with this. And I think when you summarize all this, you get to a point where we're all pretty much happy with where things landed here in Requiem for a Dragon. So
it's definitely building off of like the past three story arcs of stuff, like in bridging them together, and I think a player's also really respond to when things come together, and it feels like that's starting to happen.
Yes, yeah, because that was the thing always, you know, in the Sixth Age series and in the Elder God Wars, those were the most rewarding quests. So,
oh yeah, like as an Azanadra's quest, it feels like, oh, this is starting to kick into high gear, right?
Yeah, or you know, there's people who didn't like Azanadra's quest because it was 2 hours running around reading. But I was a fan of Azanadra's quest. I was actually just thinking that, Evernick, that kind of comparison there. But
that's my jam, right? Like story and reward. That's really what I'm here for.
Right. Let Maud Raven
I don't
go.
Want hustle.
Let Maud Raven go. Let him write 50,000 words that needs to be edited down.
But think about how great it'd be with more puzzles.
Right? Are you on the Elemental Workshop bandwagon, Evernick?
I'm on it, yeah. I'm decent.
Yes. Okay.
I'm here for us. Pure puzzles. Don't even have to give me a quest screen. Just give me a puzzle.
Well, I know. I think we got the right panel for that, if and when it ever arrives. But let's dive into some stuff here from Requiem for a Dragon. And I think the first thing that players were very, very pleased with, and you know, we got confirmation of this by Maud Shrike, is that there's actually a huge dialogue puzzle when you first go and talk with Zem Regal in the quest here.
This really excited me. Because
I didn't know
this was in here
until after the fact.
I didn't either. I thought there were right answers.
Yeah, this is one of those things where it looks very shallow when you play it, but there's actually a ton of depth to it.
Right,
I'm a sucker for dialogue puzzles.
Because I just showed off my necromancy strength, and because I had 120, that was an immediate pass.
So you just flexed at Zemo, and he was in awe of your magnificent necromantic muscles.
Pretty much.
I like was just a complete asshole and made fun of you.
Which is the right answer. Right.
Yes. Well, of course.
Like, look at your Skeletor looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah, Goober, look how many times I've beaten you. You suck so much.
No, this thing's deep. Like, the fact that it references all the way back to your decision in Dishonor Among Thieves about picking the Zamorakians or Sliskei side is, it's the deep cut.
The fact that flexing your necromancy muscles has a chance to fail.
Right, if you're not 120. If
blew
you're not
my mind. Yeah.
RNG in my dialogue is nothing so amazing. Sacred.
Which, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, of course, that's going to be a very RuneScape-y thing that, you know, there's going to be a RNG roll and something even like a dialogue expression on that. But, you know, in terms of summarizing that in the way it looks, compared to other places that dialogue in the game, it's just wonderful to see that. And actually, we'll throw a link in the show notes to Maud Shrike's post in the in the official Discord this week, where she basically posted the entire decision tree on this, and it's like, wow, okay. Yeah. So there is indeed that discussion going on, like you mentioned, Evernick, for Dishonor Among Thieves, Eye of Het, and Aftermath as well in there.
Yeah, the tie in the quests in particular is really good. And I think Maud Shrike made this point in the Discord, is this is directly in response to feedback from players who said, like, made the very good point that, like, okay, fair, you don't necessarily want to gate storyline behind old content, but we've done old content.
We have history with Zemo.
Yeah, we have history with Zemo. It feels weird that he never mentions that. That doesn't come up. Mm-hmm. You'd think it would. Like, we have whooped his ass, like, six times now. Depending on your choices, but...
This is going to come across as a slight complaint, but I don't mean it as such, is part of the reason that going into this section that I thought, oh, there's a right answer, and I picked the answer I thought was right, and it was the answers that didn't require any like backstory or whatever, because it felt like, oh, he's not going to respond to me being a necromancer.
I think that's fair, because you would have been conditioned to say that and do that.
Exactly. So the complaint is that while doing it, I didn't get it right until afterwards,
right?
And it's because the rest of the game before it doesn't have this. So my request would then be, I hope we get a lot more of this, so then we do go in thinking, oh, maybe I have a chance at succeeding on this. It's like Baldur's Gate or D&D, right? Maybe I have a chance on this persuasion check. Mm-hmm. If this becomes a constant thing, I think it's really cool and would be an awesome addition to quests. As a one-off, it's a fun novelty, but I don't think you can expect a player to like play it. You have to play it, the dialogue, in a different way in order to make the most of it.
Right, and see, that's my thing, is that as has been mentioned before, and I think even mentioned in pre-show yesterday, I forget when that was. Boy, that's a long time ago. my bloodlust was mentioned in terms of in the past how I just kill, you know, whatever I could in the quests, and you know that's why I went, you know, for the show off your mastery of necromancy option. Mm-hmm. So
and
that's why I'm surprised you didn't try to kick the shit out of
forecast. we should
circle back to the forecast.
Speaking about dialogue options, and that was the other big one in the quest, is that you have three options for first interacting with Vorkath. You have the option to study the creature, reach out your hand in a friendly manner, or slay the beast in an aggressive way. And, you know, it was put on that you guys thought that I would have been the one who would have made the decision to slay the beast here, but no, I didn't do that. I went with the friendly option.
Yeah, I mean, because like, by the time you do that, you've gone to the library on the other side of Ungale, you've read Zorgoth's journal, you've interacted with the archivist, and you've heard this really sad story about how Vorkath is actually like this really nice, friendly, happy dragon who was brainwashed against his will into being a murderous beast. And it's like, it's very manipulative, but it's done very effectively, where it makes you really, at least like for me,
that's Maud Raven, because Maud Raven did Zorgoth Journal.
It's very Maud Raven, but like it works really like, especially for me as a pet owner, it works really well to like make me empathize with Vorkath, and I want to just like hug him and make things okay.
The whole quest is based on you want to help the puppy, the lost puppy.
Exactly. So then, like, they give you this option to attack the puppy. And, like, who is going to kick the puppy?
What insane person would do that?
What awful, horrible person.
Look, I'm going to go in this the same argument that I did with the Zemmerigal tree, is that I thought there was a right answer. And I tried the top two ones first, and they didn't produce results. And I wanted results. And he seemed very happy to let me attack him to death. So, yes, I did do the slay the beast option.
Does he fight back?
No. He wanted it.
Because, you know, the funniest thing...
He had to sit there and do 75,000 damage.
Like, the funnest thing for that would have been to kick you into a hard mode Vorkath fight.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. No, I actually really like what they did, because they make you feel...
Right,
how
you don't just one hit him, you have to keep hitting him over and over and over.
What would make it better is if there is a way, there is a secret way to back out afterwards that's not obvious, but you can still do it. Right, like if you stop attacking him at any point, you can go back and go back into the dialogue tree. That would be so brutal, but I would love it as a design choice.
Yeah.
As a story choice.
If, like I said, if they keep doing these dialogue trees that are more puzzly and more like D&D type game checks, then I'll get used to it. But until then, if you let me kill the thing for instant gratification, I'm going to kill the thing for instant gratification.
The only thing I'll say against this kind of dialogue thing, because I love it to death.
I'm sure it adds a lot of work.
I'm sure it adds a lot of work. But what I'm going to say is, I think the problem with it in a RuneScape context is this kind of thing really lends itself to replayability. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the kind of thing that you usually see in single-player RPGs like Witcher, like Mass Effect, like Baldur's Gate, mm-hmm. where the expectation is that you play them again to see what you missed.
Mm-hmm.
But replayability has never really been a big thing in RuneScape. It's not always a big thing in MMOs in general. It's becoming more so with... I shouldn't say becoming, but like it's more so in more class-based RPGs like World of Warcraft or The Old Republic or Star Trek Online, where you do sort of spin up multiple characters and play the story multiple ways. But RuneScape has never really had a culture of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know that the gameplay style really supports it.
Right. And you know,
so I think that's
past,
a weakness. But
like in the past, when you've been talking about replayability, you've had things like the maze in Endgame and having Endgame be replayable just to see all the different dialogue options that were possible as a result of that. Dimension of Disaster also comes to mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it comes to ultimate replayability quests, you remember before they put the Myrec finale out, they started up a beta server so people mm-hmm. could go back and mm-hmm. play that. And it was single digits the amount of people that played that, and I knew four of them myself.
Yeah. Well, that's what they've always said in response to the like the quest players who ask for quest replayability is just no one does it unless they do the broken home thing and put rewards behind it, but then everyone complains about that.
Right. Yeah. So
do it.
So to bring all this back and close the loop on that, then what we have here is just a good way of rewarding choice in past quests without. And you know, it'd be interesting to know how much extra work that was, but it's an interesting way of rewarding that without, you know, going the full replayability, mm-hmm. or quest replayability thing. So,
yeah,
I think that's fair.
And I just want to, say too, that you can really tell, someone has to be pretty intimate with the lore and the mm-hmm. background, to be able to even write it the way that they did.
Right, to know
this is somebody that is really loves it, you know.
Yep.
And that's what I said, and that's what I knew going into this based on the people that were on this quest.
Yep.
You had Mod Shrike as featured lead, Mod Zura helping out, Mod Stu helping out, and Mod Raven doing a lore book. And, you know, of course there's everybody
and
else.
So many others
QA
as well, yeah,
and,
but
yeah, and the full credit list that Mod Shrike posted. But the bulk of the quest was those people, and those are, you know, the questers. People when it comes
what a team
modern dev team. This is like the A team of quests. This is the best quest team you could ask for with the current dev structure.
I mean, the only way you can make it better is if we could add more people.
Yeah,
no, there's other good ones too, but these are pretty great.
Yeah,
but overall, I mean, a dialogue like that, I feel like that's a good thing, and I feel like that gave it the depth that people wanted that wasn't necessarily there before, and it makes it about you and not just being the observer. So that's what that seeks to... That's the itch that seeks to scratch.
Was... Not to get away from mechanics too much, but just to speak about the story in this Zemo prison section.
Yeah.
Did Zemo feel different to anyone else when talking to him compared to the rest of the Fort storyline, or even like Elder God Wars or Slisky game type era? I feel like he got like pretty serious, pretty fast here, even making fun of him. I feel like you do that. And then he narrows down and he has answers and real like thought. And I don't know. I feel like he got more serious.
I think the reason he comes across that way is because of what you find in Zorgoth's journal and what happens at the end of the quest.
Yeah, I mean,
and
I think
his last line of the quest, I think, says it
yeah,
all.
Yeah, that's the one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that really stands out, because he's like...
Yeah, not to skip to the end of the quest. Yeah,
yeah, not to skip to the end of it, but, you know, just picking up
but
on...
Like, the fact we end the quest and him thinking, like, I have to think about this. I'm like, wow,
right.
Is Emery
thinking? And I suspect that at this point in time, when we first go talk to him about some stuff that's happening with Vorkanth, he's thinking, oh, this might be an option in my head of what's going on that happens at the end. Mm-hmm. And we
right, like,
right.
I think there's two readings for Zemo being different. And they both can be true. Like, one of them is we've never really seen him in a state of weakness for extended mm-hmm. periods. Like, we've beaten him, but he's always done, like, the Skeletor thing
away.
Where he runs away. Yeah, gotta get you next time, He-Man. Shake fist. But also, yeah, like, he is... We were discussing this in pre-show, but I think, like, Zemo's character is very much... He's out for his own interests, and he mm-hmm. will align with whoever... is powerful in the moment and can help him advance his own interests. And at the moment, that's us.
Right.
So he has a vested interest in actually being helpful to us, at least for the time being.
Yeah, he's kind of an ally during this quest, and I think that he could be going forward. Like, he could be someone we call on again in the future to help.
Yeah.
And has it been the general sense with most Majorat,
yeah.
though?
With some shackles.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that is kind of a Majorat thing. And what's funny to me, though, is after the ritual, you would have thought you wouldn't see as much backbiting, positioning, you know, just, but mm-hmm. they can't, they have no chill. Majora have no chill.
Absolutely not. They are an entire race of Saturday morning cartoon villains, and poor Wahi trying to keep them all in line.
Oh. Well, they get chilly when you get, you know, certain black things that are very cold
yes.
from certain dimensions. But
they really do like those large black objects.
Yeah.
Foreshadowing.
That are very cold. We'll get there. And as I mentioned in the summary, part of this quest as well was going through this and, you know, trying to find a way to cleanse that corruption from Vorkanth that we saw, and part of this involved doing the archaeology ritual, finding this old artifact. And this is just where the archaeology stuff really just, you know, when came in, bam, 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 tying in Tomes of the Warlock, getting that confirmation that Ms. Lionar was Raziel, and tying it into the Tree of Balance as well, and capping it all off with a couple of little digs south of the Memorial of Guthix there, out in the far west. That's archaeology.
Kind of felt like
truly
an archaeology mystery.
Yes,
just in the middle
exactly.
of the west.
Yeah, it did.
Going off to find like little excavations and then solving a little dialogue riddle, and yeah, I was very content with this.
Because when we did the necromancy lore special, I think we basically said that that's gonna be Raziel, and you know mm-hmm. it was very much inferred around the edges, I think, and this, you know,
yeah.
it confirmed it, and it's probably the way the lore yeah. folks would have wanted it to go, and it I think we were wondering when necromancy came out is what is the whole grand scheme in this aside from stopping Raziel, because as you said, Zerdones, there have been times in RuneScape's past where things have felt very Saturday morning cartoon villainish, and there were points at, you know, the progression through necromancy where it's like, is Raziel just a general bad guy? Is there going to be something more at play here? Is there going to be something a little bit more that, you know, we're going to get rewarded for as we progress further on down the line? And is Alpha versus Omega the end of it? And you know, Alpha versus Omega is the end of the Raziel storyline, but when it comes down to stuff about Raziel's lore and the necromancy, or rather the archaeology stuff we learned in Tomes of the Warlock, we picked that right up here in the middle, and in many ways, I feel like that was a cherry on top of the quest that we had here.
Yeah, it was a yeah. nice addition. It was nice to tie in to the necromancy storyline, because I think that was a really weird break in the 4 and 3 storyline, which I think was motivated by a lot of external production factors. It's nice to tie those together. And also to, like, it's not a requirement to this quest, but I like how it kind of builds off of what we learned about Raziel in Alpha versus Omega.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And it feels like by clarifying this, there maybe is some interest in just like making it more explicit that like there was like Cathixian tools in play that we could fall back on like we did here. I was pretty intrigued that like the Tree of Balance is planted on an old necromancy site. I'm like, oh, give me that one too.
What?
And did anyone else think like, oh shit, like this guy isn't just the strongest necromancer. He had to have been a hell of a strong wizard. Like he's bringing knowledge or runes to get on like, damn.
I think he was the first wizard even.
And the first necromancer.
Like, I mean, this is a power.
And the first murdered.
Freaking. Well, yeah.
Why?
No, this was a big day.
I have a question.
Uh-oh.
Why did the dig sites, or the dig site by the Guthix Memorial there, give earth and clay? Was it just because they wanted another way of tying it to the white oak?
Because it's green.
Yeah, I think that's why.
Okay. I think that's the entire reason it's green.
It's the same reason
who knew that Guthixian stuff was secretly Bendosian.
Yeah, I had that same thought. I was like, because I took my auto screener, so I didn't get the dirt, but I was getting the Malachite green. I was like, why am I digging up Bandosian stuff? This doesn't make sense. But yeah, I like green Guthix.
I'm pretty sure that's...
I just like, had that as a side question.
A lot of budget went into this quest, but yeah, you can't... I don't think it was reasonable to expect a new archaeology material.
No, of course not. I wouldn't. And, you know, what I was expecting when I got there was I was just expecting to get progress and get the piece and not get any materials through it. That's what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm. Like in Dead and Buried or was it Ancient Awakening?
Yeah, something like that. So,
they said they made a point of using real archaeology because that was a feedback before.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay, then. And, you know, you get the two pieces of the... of the artifact there. And I feel like what you said, Abernick, that again, that's potentially maybe saying that, well, maybe sometime in the future there could be something at the Tree of Balance pertaining to necromancy, perhaps? Yes, no, maybe so?
Yeah, I mean, I think this quest does really well is like setting up just a lot of stuff that can be an option going forward, like using like the Tree of Balance, like mysterious shadow forces. Like there's a lot of things that are introduced that might not, that are probably in like past quest series that weren't required that now we have options.
It seeds some story elements that can be pulled on later.
Right.
Like
and
fact
that's
that the
another
Tree
thing.
Of Balance is built over a Guthixian shrine implicitly says that there are other Guthixian shrines. So one can just pop up in a future quest.
Yeah.
And it's just there. And it's like, oh, it was here all the time, but we just didn't know because
nobody
and then we're like, oh, they were totally setting this up. And they're like, yeah, we
right,
totally.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. We thought this yesterday, but it was.
Future great. Archaeology site? New Guthix shrine?
You never know.
I'll take every archaeology you give me.
and see, that's the thing, is that you never really got this kind of, as you said it, you know, seeding of lore, seeding of potential, you know, future story threads in the recent quests. That was a thing that was done primarily back in the Six Age quests and, you know, was actually even abandoned, I'd say, in the Elder God Wars stuff, too, because they were very much...
That was so busy just
wrapping things up. And
yeah, I mean, there was some of that. I think it's an integral
the
part
masks.
Of... Yeah, like, it's an integral part of MMO storytelling, because MMOs conceptually have to tell stories theoretically forever. Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to seed things while you're telling a story that you can pull on later so they don't feel like they come out of nowhere.
Especially not knowing where they're going to end up. Like they have to just start putting things in that someone later has been like, ah, these are going to work really well together, but no one thought of it before.
Right. And like,
they have to be flexible.
And divination does that pretty well, and archaeology does that pretty well, where they can basically just be like random story delivery slot machines, because basically anything can come out of them that can tell a story.
Especially gothic stuff.
Especially
gothic
stuff.
That's funny the way you mentioned it. Just how you can get so much random stuff out of divination in particular is kind of what I'm thinking right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, if you think about the Elder God Wars, like, that's why we use divination all the time, because divination is just a really useful skill for expositing information to the player.
Yeah.
And archaeology is kind of a similar way in certain contexts.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good. So, I mean, it really goes to show how archaeology is the lore skill, and I think when you summarize all this up at the end of the day, you wind up in a situation where I think the traditional lore questers and whatnot, and just the questy type folks, were very pleased with it on here. Now,
yeah, super engaged.
We're going to jump a bit ahead right now to near the end of the quest, because I mentioned that when you're trying to cleanse Vorkath on Ungale, you first do the ritual at with no problem, but when you try and do it at Ungale, who appears other than Vengeance, Bilroth, and some more Zamorakian scouts?
And some mysterious
relic
thingy.
Yeah.
So
that looks so cool.
So what the hell is happening here? And by the way, if anybody from Jagex is listening, I want that armor that Bilroth was wearing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Start giving us that animation, especially.
Yeah, with all the colors and the light coming off it. That.
The grape juice.
The grape juice.
The purple goo.
Oh, okay. I was more referring to the blue particles and whatnot, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, you just want to look like a Jack Kirby character. That's fine.
Okay, fair enough. Also, at this point, I didn't put this in the notes, but I think I should mention it. 3D animated cutscene.
Yes, that was a big one. Return of
the 3D animated cutscene here. Yep. You see Bilroth and company walking up to the site as you're standing there. And it's like, holy crap, what's this?
I can see what the 2D version is in my head, too.
Right? Yeah. And I think the 3D one turns out better.
Yeah, it does. It helps that it didn't have a lot of animation. It basically just walking and pointing.
Right.
It made it really went along with the feel of this traditional RuneScape quest, with lots of story, lots of running around, long, and kind of tied it up with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was that?
100% agree.
So what was this Bilroth business there? First,
what was
he's alive. Secondly, what's that big blue swirly thing that he's trying to do? He's trying to like suck the soul from Vorkath, right?
He's trying to suck something out of Vorkath.
Some energy, something.
Because
I'm reticent to say soul because we see the soul later.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and
corruption,
notably,
maybe?
Bilroth seems happy with what happened.
Yes.
So he got what he wanted, but we
corruption.
Also know what we wanted.
Yeah. Shadow power.
I saw some theory somewhere that it might be something similar to our lantern that we have.
You're thinking is it shoot conduit?
Yeah, that.
Mm.
Interesting. I was thinking vessel.
Okay.
But I think along the same lines.
Yeah. So, I mean, all of that aside, wonderful cutscene, and you know, you fight Vengeance here, and for folks watching the video version here, you'll see that I was caught with my pants down and wasn't really expecting it, and I dropped about 3,500 HP relatively quickly, then zero, which, you know, shouldn't happen, but it did, and you just spawn back on the docks at Fort 4 and 3. But why is Bilroth here? Because we heard like that big boom or that bang in succession, and the thought was that he was dead.
Right, the strange power happened.
Yeah,
so
the strange power.
Well, and they make a point in this quest, like Zemo makes a point to say, no, Bilroth is dead. I personally watched Moya tear him apart.
Right.
He is dead.
And there is no way he is undead, so that is something else.
Yeah, well, basically, as I see it, there's basically two options. Either we've been wrong all this time, and you actually can bring Majoret back from the dead.
And Zemo's somehow. Wrong also. So not just
yeah,
us,
Zemo's wrong somehow.
A character
which is,
who is saying it definitively, which feels like a weird story choice to say himself.
Well, I mean, I think it's worth pointing out that characters within a story are not omniscient. Like,
yes.
Tolkien said this once, like, the characters in a story are not the author, and there are things they don't know. So it's possible that Zemo is just wrong. I mean, what am mm-hmm. I saying? It's probable
it
that Zemo is wrong about just anything in general.
Okay.
But, so one possibility is everyone has been wrong. There actually is a way to bring Majoret back from the dead, and this is actually Bill Rock somehow. Mm-hmm. Option two is this isn't Bill Rock, this is something else.
Mm-hmm.
Either answer seem to be very tied into, I think, the next big thing we'll talk about, which is the Black Stone.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into that too.
No, yeah, because that's its own topic, like, but the Black Stone is potentially its own podcast on itself, we say.
Yeah.
But
it, okay, is it possible, could he just be Franken Belrock?
Franken in which way?
But that's the thing. Majoret, like, which Belrock is, are not supposed to be able to be resurrected like that.
But not so resurrected. They sewed all the pieces back together after the explosion and shocked it and blah, 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 you know, there it is. He's back.
But Majoret don't have, well, what we know, the lore that we've had so far is that Majoret don't have souls. And the theology that we seem to be working with in RuneScape, and I don't know if this has changed, this is going to be a weird pull, but this is kind of the pull from Underground Pass, is if you take the soul out of a person, you're left with basically a monster. Mm-hmm. You're not left with something that can think and talk and be recognizably Belrock. So if it's a Franken Belrock, and they sewed him back together and zapped him with lightning, what is making him walk and talk is the mm-hmm. question.
Right, and then does that then does that know. Further go down the Blackstone path, I guess, is the next question.
So,
yeah, I mean, that seems to be the implication.
It seems to be at least like the reagent, the activator, what's sustaining them, something like that.
Especially given the black particle effects or the purple particle effects that are coming off
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, purple is kind of like video game shorthand for dark, corrupt, evil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Metroid does that a lot. Everything dark in Metroid is purple.
Do we also have to go back to the very fact that Vengeance is here?
That is probably where my thoughts stem from.
All right.
So one of the dialogues lines that happen while Belrock is finishing after the boss fight is that he says something along the lines of, that should be enough to sustain us, and the fact yeah. he's next to Vengeance feels like there's something, there must be some similar tie or similar power source. That's feeling.
Oh, interesting.
That's at least how I took out of time, and I think I'm sticking with it. Or he could have been referring to like some other undead Majoret we don't know about that's back at Moya's base or something like that.
Well, see, I thought he was talking about him and Moya.
Interesting.
Because, like, I think his full line is something like, Moya was right, this energy will sustain us.
I'm gonna find it.
So that
right
was the
now.
Link I made in my head.
He says, completing the ritual.
The interesting part about all this when you look at this is that this is another one of those, you know, kind of big mysterious things that's put out there, akin to writing on the walls, akin to Voss and whatnot, that us lore people are focusing on and fixating on, right? But there's no yeah. guarantee that any of this is going to come to pass in a future
no.
quest.
Well, I think we know that, because we were told explicitly that this quest would set up
the
next players for the
story
next storyline.
Yeah.
So that says to me that Belrock and Vengeance are going to be big parts of the next storyline.
Yes.
And, like, you're right,
and
there's no guarantee.
And the relic.
And Moya.
And the relic. And maybe Moya.
Moya could still be background.
Yeah, Moya could still be background, just kind of pulling the strings and not directly involved, but she could be involved. We don't know yet.
But would you really write Moya out after going through such a laborious effort of putting her in the Civil War storyline?
I wouldn't say writing out. I would say that we haven't escalated to that yet.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, she's like, controlling Balrog the way I see it.
Yes.
So,
well, or she thinks she is.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Which may tie into our next big
topic. So the thing is, Balrog, but how? Moya killed you. Balrog says, Zamriegel told you that. Did he? He is correct, but always blind to the larger picture. Just as he failed to comprehend the true purpose of this beast,
the boss fight,
referring to Vorkath. And then later on, preparing the mysterious relic, Balrog says she was right. The dark power contained within this creature is more than enough to sustain us.
Right, so who's the us? Up to debate, I think.
Yeah, it's an open question.
The other reason I thought Phantom was something that happened in Remains of the Necrolord, where we're traveling down Demonheim and we revive the corpse of the Forgotten Warrior that we know is Vengeance.
Right.
And they start talking like they don't know what they're talking about, which to me signals that the soul of that body is a separate entity from the Vengeance that's Phantom that walks around. Right?
Yes.
The soul wasn't in Vengeance. So that says, like, do phantoms need a soul? I don't know. Which, I don't know.
Well, my next question with that is, what other examples of phantoms do we have in the game?
Spirit of War and the Slayer Creatures. I think that's it.
Okay.
So not a lot to go on. I think it's a new little lore nugget that was introduced in Necromancy that got a little touched on in Remains of the Necrolord, but I don't know if that's something they're tugging at here. I like the idea of phantoms personally because there's a structure to them, and I'm a sucker for, you can start putting some hard magic rules behind it that, like, oh, they had an emotion that was so strong it created this entity which is classed as undead, but that appeals to me.
Yeah. Another, another theory in addition to the phantom versus not being killed and, you know, being somehow brought back. I think those are the main three options we can talk about. But I feel like, you know, we were all led to believe that in succession, that strange power, the bang, as I keep calling it, was the Majra dying Balrog.
Yes.
So we'll sit with that. Another thing that was suggested, and I feel like this kicks us off into our next point, is that potentially Balrog was reanimated by Zautak. That's another thing that was suggested to me.
This one feels the most similar to the 2018 event, which I think is a good parallel to draw.
Especially with Vengeance being involved. Lucian.
Right. We had Moya involved. Lucian was, we know he was dead, and then somehow came back. So that having something to do with it feels likely.
Yeah. And that's the next interesting bits about this, is that you start looking at this quest and you see all the Zautak stuff being mentioned around the edges, in particular in Zorgoth's journal, mentioning Karapak studies, the explicit mention of there being something cold and dark inside Vorkath, which can only be Blackstone based on what we know about the lore, replacing Vorkath's heart with it, and the entire story around Vorkath really does scream Blackstone, Zautak, and all that stuff that we saw in the Elite Dungeon series and Curse of the Blackstone.
Yeah, Zautak is all over this. There's a mention, like one of Harold's lines about Raziel mentions that before he became Raziel, he was having nightmares about black hands.
Right, kind of solidifying the ominous shadows he was talking about at the end of Alpha versus Omega to be more confirmed than it was, at least.
Right, and of course, everybody knows the hands from the Elite Dungeon, so, I mean, that's obvious from us as a player perspective. I don't think we need to question that around the edges. That is where this goes.
I also think it's worth pointing out that, because at the end of this quest, Vorkath's spirit is in and there's some optional post-quest interactions you can have.
Oh, there is. Okay, good.
One of which is if you take a Blackstone heart, the drop from the Elite Dungeons, and right-click use it on the spirit, you get an angry response.
Really?
Yes.
Which, again, points at, yeah, Vorkath is aware of Blackstone and is really, really angry about it.
Well, yeah, because he had a Blackstone heart, right?
So. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think it's more than just implied. Like, these are firm connections. I say it, I'll be proven wrong in a year, I'm sure.
I think the question isn't how firm it is, it's how prominent will it be.
Right. Right. Because it could be like I said, like Voss in Writing on the Walls, and that it's just something there for us lore people to focus on, when in reality it's going to be a surface level story about Bilrock, perhaps.
Or it could go the other way, and it's like, oh, we're going into some Shadow Breach next quest, and we're having Erebus-Airs.
Right,
like,
because that was mentioned. Yeah. That was mentioned here as well, the Shadow Realm.
Yeah, the lore book from
the lore book, yes.
Right, and I don't know why that needs to be mentioned, because I feel like the Shadow Realm stuff is largely finished with the Elder God War stuff, no?
It's partially... Yeah. It is tied to Erebus stuff, but it's not like a direct. I feel like this might have just been an opportunity to get the book in the game, while being loosely tied.
It's been long speculated that Zautak is related to the Shadow Realm in some way.
Yes.
So it could just be convenient timing.
And the book was, as read out in 2018 RuneFest, written by an unknown Dragonkin. So just putting in some Dragonkin content that's also Zautak related, it feels like a little alignment of good opportunity.
Yeah. It's possible we're reading too much into it. I do feel like, especially with Vorkath having the Blackstone heart, mm-hmm. and Bilrock siphoning off, like Bilrock being very interested in dark powers within Vorkath and the corruption of Vorkath, like, I don't expect Zautak to be a prominent part of the next storyline, but I expect there to be a Zautak flavor to the storyline, if that difference makes sense.
Right.
It's going to be the tools and the MacGuffins to which we get our present characters to enable them to do crazy things and plots. That we have
because isn't the idea behind this, that if we were to go full Erebus again on this, that we wouldn't be able to now at this point because we lost our World Guardian powers?
Technically, I imagine they can make up.
Well, yeah, the writers can come up with anything. I think the bigger problem is it would be a big reversal of the desire to de-escalate.
But see, that's the thing that I have heard people complain about. And even for me, it's that I feel like, yeah, you can do stuff like the early Fort storylines, like a zombie uprising that's going to potentially
other side of the spectrum.
Rock.
Yep.
And whatnot. But at the same time, how many different ways can you rinse and repeat that unless you're going to, cycle through the entire area again? Next place, we go to Kandarin and figure out what's happening there, and we do another, grounded storyline with that. But I feel like RuneScape 3, and in particular, most of the lore people we know, those people really cut their teeth on, this kind of stuff that's bordering the cosmic edge. And I think having that in-game is wonderful. It's just a question of how do you do it without making it universe-ending.
Well, and also how do you do it within RuneScape's graphical engine?
We're going to write back to 2D cutscenes.
Right. Like, I think that's the big problem with Zautak specifically, because RuneScape can't do Zautak as a character. It's not
physically present. Yes.
It's not practical in the graphics engine in the same way that we really couldn't do the Shadow Leviathan in Extinction.
Mm-hmm. Or use Jazz in any environment that's not that one cave.
Right. We can't realistically depict Zautak in any way that will be at all satisfying. So, that's not a matter of we don't want to escalate up to cosmic proportions. That's just the practical reality of the game. I'm not saying they couldn't try, but it would be a mistake.
I'm also going to pose just the question of, isn't it fun when it's in the background?
Yeah,
like
that. Right.
That's
exactly.
That's what we're excited about is finding.
It's a big mystery, just like Zaros used to be a mystery.
The mystery, yeah. The mystery is the intriguing thing. That's the balance.
I did the Ghostly Robes mini quest a week and a bit ago on Old School. Which, of course, tells the betrayal of Zaros, and you know, even now, all these years in, 20 years later almost, that's a fun mini quest to go through, just, you know, reliving how, you know, everybody had their own experience with it and getting closer and closer and closer kind of thing, right?
Yeah, so. I mean, it's the Jaws thing, right? As soon, or maybe Cloverfield is a better example. As soon as you see the monster, it loses a lot of its effectiveness. And that kind of happened with Zaros, where, like, yeah, Zaros was built up as, like, this, ooh, what is Zaros? What is Zaros? Spoken in hushed tones. And then you saw him, and depending on your point of view, either, like, you think he's amazing, or you think he's kind of a tool. But Zautak has a similar problem. Like, Zautak, if you actually see Zautak, and Zautak is just, like, a dude with a million black hands coming out of his back, that you fight as a boss fight, just
a boss fight, and that's over.
Yeah, that was really anticlimactic.
Mm-hmm. No, it's cool that it's here, though. This does feel like something. And, that people
and I
were
think if we bring it back,
something like this,
where if we tie the Zautak stuff in now, and we definitely assume that's the place where this is going to go, because you wouldn't talk about the Blackstone Heart, you wouldn't talk about Karapak's studies and all of that in Zorgoth's journal if it wasn't going to be integral to this quest. So is it as simple a case that if you put two and two together, you get four, the two and two being the Blackstone stuff here and Bilrock seemingly being alive, that mysterious force behind it, which, you know, I think we still don't fully understand, is what
Blackstone's shadow anima stuff. Yeah,
Blackstone shadow anima stuff. Is that how Bilrock came back? Is that the question then?
It definitely seems like the tool done. The tool used to do it.
Yeah, that's the direction I'm leaning. I think if I could make a crystal ball prediction for how this story, I don't want to say storyline, but how this story period is going to end, I would lean towards something like Pieces of Hate. Where
it's kind of just around the edges.
Yeah, like Zautak is doing something via an agent. That agent could be Bilrock, the agent could be Moya, could be Moya and Bilrock. But Zautak isn't directly involved, they're just sort of influencing events, and we deal with their agent and drop a big rock on Zautak, and he goes back into the Shadow Realm to lick his wounds.
Right, and see, the thing as well with the whole Zautak stuff that I was under the impression of was that after Curse of the Blackstone and the Elite Dungeons in particular, I thought that, I forget who said it at the time, but I feel like the sense is that we were done with Zautak, is what they said.
That sounds familiar. I think it's probably too tempting to go back to, firstly because players obviously really respond to it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Partly because of very the whole popular. Like
mystery.
Yeah, it's very popular. Also, like, Mod Jack as lead designer, like his whole deal is Lovecraft. I shouldn't say his whole deal, but like Mod Jack, he is really into like Lovecraft stuff. He's said this several times. So Zautak is really in his wheelhouse. Very Lovecraft inspired.
Right. Which then does lean more towards it's going to be background and horror-y and unknown and not as explained. If you explain it, it's not Lovecraft, right? It's sci-fi.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And then with that, the little extra for people like us is, you know, we can say exactly what's happening then behind the scene with that.
Yeah, we can
theorize. It's like how if you watch a modern Star Trek episode, the people who are invested in that lore are able to give you the entire backstory of what's happened with a certain race or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I think is good about doing the mystery side of it is that we haven't had any of that since the Elder God Wars, and I think that brings players along and gets people more interested in quests.
It gets you engaged in the story when there's an unknown.
Yes, precisely.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's a famous TED Talk that J.J. Abrams did talking about mystery boxes.
I hate the mystery box idea.
Everyone does, and for good reason, but I do think he's right about the fact that questions are an important part of driving interest in story. Questions are what get people interested. If you raise a bunch of questions, people will want to know the answers. There are problems with how that can be implemented and how J.J. Abrams in particular implemented it. But a really easy way to get people really invested is just to raise questions like this.
What's the biggest question then that you guys have? I realize I didn't, prepare you guys for this, so I'll start with mine then.
Picking one's hard.
Right. And my idea behind this, my question is, well, if we're going to be, doing this stuff with Zautak around the edges, what's to prevent us then from dabbling in terms of, other mysteries that are left unanswered after the end of the Elder God Wars and the gods being around? In particular, like some of the stuff that was left hanging at the end of archaeology, like writing on the walls and the Voss thing. It's not necessarily related to this quest, but it still poses a big question at the end of the day.
What's on the table now?
What's on the table now, and what are the limits of what RS3 can do with its lore and its mystery pushing?
Luckily for you, I think that currently, due to, I guess, past reception of stuff, I think they're very open to shaping the story to
what we want
right now.
Yeah.
That does definitely seem to be the case.
Anyways, big questions that you guys have.
What powers the Blackstone, and is it Shadow Anima?
Okay. Yeah.
Fair.
I feel like I can lean on that and say probably Shadow Anima, but do we know for sure?
I think it's been heavily implied.
Or that they're like different variants of the same thing, like ones like the crystal version or the Goopy Anima version or things like that. I think.
All right. Avernix or Dones?
I think for me, my biggest open question at the moment is sort of... I'm going to cheat a little bit and sort of have two questions. But
The
biggest question for me is sort of related to the question of who Bilrock means when he says us. Uh-huh. But my question is more, when he says the power will sustain us, why is that important to him?
Yep. Those are good ones.
Is he speaking about just him then? Or all Majorat?
Or even if it's just a couple of Majorat, like, why? Why does he need... why does he need power in general to sustain himself? Or to sustain whoever us is?
Right, it's not just a
girl
power,
it's
to sustain.
Yeah, because can they do another ritual of rejuvenation? Or is that off the table?
I think they can, but they don't have to. I think they can.
Or do we break them from that?
Well, we freed them from the necessity. It's unclear if they are still able to.
A really silly, interesting point, because when Bilrock was killed, there was a ritual marker right in front of him.
Yeah.
Huh. This was in the succession cutscene, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Zemo didn't repower. That's kind of funny, actually.
Which means either Bilrock's power didn't disperse, or Moya hoovered it up.
But we had the same thing, like the strange power. So we have to assume that it went somewhere, right?
It was felt around the world. So, I just saw that now. That's kind of funny. Those are good questions.
Yeah, that definitely raises a big question going forward, I think, especially when you highlight that point about the ritual marker at the end of succession. There.
Yeah, I think. You guys have said a couple of questions that I was interested in, so I'll just go to, and I had many, so I'll stick to
one
that hasn't been said.
Yeah.
And it's the relic. I feel like that's just sitting there and it's not even talked about. But it looks cool.
Which relic are you talking about?
The one that Bilrock Invention Shop.
Okay. Yes. Good.
Yeah. And I just want to know what that is.
Yeah, that's a big one. It's barely acknowledged, which is
it's not acknowledged, and the exam is like, yes, it's mysterious.
Might as well have just called it MacGuffin.
And I don't know if you
guys
had
assumptions. It is fun having those again, isn't it? Those big kind of questions like that.
My assumption was that was something they found on the island, and that's why Moya was interested in Ungale. And then they came to collect Vorkath's soul once they got it. But I've also heard people talk about, they just brought it with them. So I don't know which way to lean there.
It doesn't look like anything that I remember seeing before. Like, the visual design doesn't look familiar to me.
Mm-hmm. No.
Which leads me to believe they might have found it on Ungale.
It's also blue we haven't seen before. Because keep in mind, the necromancy stuff is either purple for the necromantic stuff and teal for anything that's conjured.
Right.
Those are the two big colors of necromancy with that.
Yeah, it's kind of like a bluish purple. Like, it's got blue haze around it, but the core of it is purple and black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact you mentioned black there, that also, you know, speaks volumes. So, but yeah, always fun having big questions like that. And I think the question, the biggest one is like, where do we go next with this?
My crackpot theory is that Moya can make some facsimile of a Majorat once. Why would she not do it more? She's clearly expressed interest in having larger Majorat numbers at the end of succession.
Why does she want that, though?
A good question.
I don't know.
Maybe she just wants an army.
An army,
an army of immortal lich mages that are loyal to her, that she can use to storm the gates.
I don't know if it takes anything from Bilrock if they start doing like Nabor and Palkira and Jalin or stuff like that, but it sounded fun in my head.
Because wasn't the entire, you know, bit about bringing Moya around, if we go back to Extinction on this, is that she tries to kill us and prevent us from getting out with that. So even in Extinction, it was her goal to get us out of the way so that she could do whatever she was going to do. So this has been a plan that's been hatched for a long time.
Yeah, we're a perceived threat.
That's a good way of putting it.
To be fair, an actual threat.
Yep.
Usually.
So then I guess the big question for what's next is, do we keep this small, or do we up the escalation at this point, given what we had?
Go ahead. I'll say mine quick, because I think I know it's quick, which was just that, to our knowledge and what we've been told by JMods this week, is that the upcoming next stories, whatever, will require this. So it feels like we're getting bigger, or at least just growing and growing and growing.
Yeah, I mean, we've been told, I mentioned this before, but we were told that this quest would set up both the next storyline, and specifically we were told that it would introduce the major players of the next storyline. Mm-hmm. So that tells me that the next storyline is Bilrock and Vengeance. Bilrock is positioned really well to be a boss type character, like a major antagonist. So that says to me that we're taking a step up the escalator.
One step.
Yeah, we're not leaping up to Voss or Zaros or anything, but we're going up to fighting a Majorat who is marginally more impressive than Zemo.
And I think the end of it. And I think that if you look at the last two lines of the quest here, when you're talking to Zemo, he says that, you know, you say that you saw Bilrock, and he's like, he says, unless it wasn't really him. Then player says, right. Then what did
he
I see?
He knows something.
A sign of her ambition. Let me be. This changes things.
It's good to point out the last couple lines of the quest, because that's obviously what they want us to think about.
On the so sign that's of her ambition.
Probably pretty indicative.
Actually,
a line.
Yeah, that makes me think. Like, that we did the Moya Lore Diggers a couple of weeks ago, and we brought up how no one really knows how Moya was created. What if she's doing the same? Like, what if Tanis is right and Bilrock is Franken-Bilrock, and the thing that's animating him is Moya doing a Lucian?
Like a human
whatever
soul.
Whatever that is.
So now he's half Majorat or something?
Yeah. Whatever Lucian did to make her, she's now doing to dead Majorat.
And for some reason, it requires Zautak Blackstone stuff to make it work. At least maybe this time, I don't know.
Yeah.
And see, that's the thing.
Or maybe it always did. I mean,
right. And that's what I was going to say. It could require that. And this, it is so big and has such ramifications that Zamriegel said, she can't have brought Bilrock back. My kind have no souls and no underworld. There's nothing to bring back once we perish. And he's like, unless.
Quick little exposition.
So it's like, there she is doing something that I never thought she would do, and we really need to imagine this. So I think with that is that we do infer from these last few lines of the quest that she did bring him back, and she's doing it in a way that's very dangerous, mm-hmm. to the point where Zamriegel's willing to, you know, just think, okay, maybe I need to be working with Mr. Adventurer then instead.
Yeah, maybe I should switch sides.
I would not be surprised if the next quest starts with us talking to him, like, okay, let's go investigate some shit.
Yeah, I expect Zemo to be I don't want to say friendly NPC, but a
source of knowledge?
Frenemy. Reluctantly allied NPC.
Frenemy is a good way of putting it.
Frenemy. Yeah, frenemy is a good one.
And I didn't know, like, I thought, yeah, this is a good quest, and I was very pleased with it, and I was thinking, you know, that it can't be too big, but it wasn't until I really looked at those last few lines of dialogue in the quest again that I realized, okay, there's something bigger here happening than we know, and the character knows, but Zamriegel knows, and it's troubling him, so that's something we should be concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if something is troubling Zemo, that's concerning.
Exciting for us as players, not our player character, but...
Yeah, it's very concerning for the player characters, very very engaging and interesting for us, yes. as nerds.
As omniscient beings in this world.
Yes.
Alrighty then. Anything else on any of Requiem for a Dragon? Anything on what happens next? Anything else before we go examine our rings?
I just want to emphasize you can pet Vorkath in
You can pet Vorkath. I also want to emphasize that the post-quest interactions, there's dialogue with the tiny Zemo pet and with the Vorkath boss pet.
Oh,
and
really?
They are both adorable.
Okay.
Yes. I don't have the Vorkath boss pet. I read that one on the wiki. But, I mean, Tiny Zemo is easy to get, and it is very funny.
That's nice, hilarious.
Yeah. Just the whole Vorkath thing I thought was really well done. The
yeah.
emotional.
Yeah, the Vorkath stuff was really well done in the setup for the next quest.
That kind of grounds the quest in a narrative start, middle, end that I think makes the quest work.
Yeah, it
gives
you a
power. You can have all this other stuff, but that's the story that ties it together.
Yeah, there's a through line, yeah.
All right. Reward wise, 100,000 necromancy XP, 100,000 archaeology XP.
I'm surprised by that. That's quite a big lamp.
Well, they show that, you know, with, you know, 70 plus 80 requirements, that's the ballpark we expect. We know it's about 50K for half that, so.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. You're not wrong. I was just surprised.
Yeah, I like that. I wish that's how it used to be, and I wish that's how it always was. There would have made things a lot less painful back in the day. But you also get Zorgoth's Ring, the Soulfarer title, the Ungale Ritual Site, the teleport incantation to it, and the ability to teleport to it with the Tome of And as promised, components are 20% more durable in exchange for 20% less XP on Ungale, and disturbances also have an increased duration at the cost of communion rituals providing no souls. So when I was doing my ectoplasm rituals this week, this is where I did it.
Yeah. It's a good place to do them.
It is so weird that the souls don't go to the Well of Souls from Ungale because we spend the whole quest making a beacon that is anchored to the Well of Souls that
that's
we use
point.
To get Vorkath there, and it sits there at the site. It's kind of
that's
fun.
A good point.
Maybe there's got to be more anchoring it, though, right?
More other than the ritual we did, the Soulfarer ritual.
Yeah,
it feels like a pretty good conduit, but they can take whatever explanation in a game, out of game they want to say, this is how we want to balance the site.
Yeah.
Just a funny little
thing. Also two achievements for it. One for teleporting to the site using the Ungale teleport incantation, and another for upgrading Zorgoth's ring, which is entitled A Reptile's Dysfunction.
Perfectly normal thing to say.
Absolutely.
Perfectly natural for dragons of a certain age. Nothing to be ashamed
of. We'll leave it there. We'll let people read between the lines on that.
Thank you, Stu.
There is also, I think you skipped over this, there's also one quest point, which I only bring up so that I can say that
Clue Schaefer's... I just assumed it was a given for people reading this or watching this.
Well, I have to bring it up because I mentioned it on the last quest week, but Clue Chasers are in shambles because now Philippe is permanently in and all the presets have to be fixed.
Yep. But Philippe does stand right next to Forcath, so I think that's an improvement.
Yeah, it's definitely a step up over the Czar Banker.
I think it would just be the ultimate form of irony if Philippe appeared in Am as a ghost instead of an actual person.
That'd be really dark, though. Like,
I hated that quest initially. I would love it if he was there as a ghost.
I realize that, like, in-universe, it's been, like, 6+ years, so logically he should be a grown-up by now, but, like, in the fiction, he's still, like, 12?
Oh, God, it's been... No, it's been 12
years. It's probably been more than 6 years.
Arcanine Rising, yeah.
Well, like, I mean, in-universe, I don't entirely know how the Sixth Age timeline works.
Or what
I think
year
it's supposed
we're
to
in?
Be, like...
It's roughly matched.
Yeah, it's moderately matched. So, okay, so World Wakes was in
2013.
Okay.
Alien Rising was before that.
Yeah, so, okay, yeah. So it's been at least 11 years, 12 years. Yeah, okay.
So he should be well into his 20s then.
Yeah, logically he should be like 20s, 30s, but like he's still a child model. In the fiction, yeah. He's still a child.
Until we move to that Once Upon a Time one that they grafted his head onto Abyssal Knight.
Oh yeah. Body. Yeah.
With a little editing, but it still kind of looks like a child head.
Yeah.
All right. Rating out of 5, Tanis.
4.
Okay. Avernick.
What's the rule on
1 to 5?
Whole numbers, fractions.
Whatever you prefer.
4, because I want to go whole number.
Okay. Zerdones?
Yeah, I think I would go with 4. I'd agree with 4.
Yeah, 4 for me as well. And, you know, I always say for something to be a 5, it really needs to either punch above in the reward or punch above in the ramifications of what it does. 4, for me, is that it ticks all the boxes of everything that was promised. It was delivered without major glitches or major bugs. It's got wonderful ambience, wonderful environment, wonderful music behind it too, which play your quests on with music, people. Absolutely do that. And sounds. We didn't mention that going through, but the tracks for this quest are wonderful in that. And, you know, it tells a good story and, you know, no plot holes and whatnot. So 4 is basically the max rating unless it truly punches above in one respect or another for me. So I'm glad. I'm glad you guys are all in relative agreement.
All in agreement.
So,
Unlike that quest tier episode we did where we were all vehemently not in agreement and it was some wild debates.
Yeah, seriously, which I should thank some Patreon supporters for right now, mind you. I mean, I realize we normally do that about 35 minutes in, but we were just too deep in that quest discussion for that this week, which this week...
We were in a flow.
Yeah, Alvaro L., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvid Zell, Chubura, Daniel W., Dominic R., Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Guy Lafleur, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Lemon Lodge, Luminos, Nate the Great, Pernasius, Renhawk, Ricky A., Rippeth, Runestar, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Targiane, The Naked Captain, The Dabbing Goat, Tim, Tom V, Truthray, Ukulele Steve, Zant, and Zazicon. Big, huge thank you to everybody. And yes, if you're wondering what was being mentioned, we are talking about the most recent monthly bit where we did the quest tier list with this, in fact, crew, I think. No, Tannis, you weren't there.
Minus Tannis, plus Earth. Not here.
Yeah, plus Earth.
Right, Earth.
Well, someone had to be wrong about everything.
That was the monthly bit episode where Legends Quest got rated D.
Which was the lowest tier. We were not given an F option.
Or else Underground Pass would have been in it.
But if you want more of the fun kind of quest discussion and just in general lore discussion about things like that, you can find all that and more over at patreon.com/RSBNB. There are tier lists of other things too, like distractions and diversions, daily scape, skills, you name it, PVM bosses, tons and tons of tier lists are available there. And we don't just do tier lists, we do other things as well. We talked about holiday events in the past, we've talked about legacy combat, we've talked about how to get into PVM of all things too. So if you're interested in maybe just getting a little bit more update or you want to support us financially, patreon.com/RSBNB. And we also do have additional tiers there, including the VIP tier, where for $3 a month, you get a rank on Discord, which includes chat channel access and a special badge. And you also get a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high quality stereo version of the show. And we also do have the insider tier, where for $5 a month, you get a shout out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, plus also at the end of the year, the RSBNB update, Patreon Christmas card, and I'll also mention our experience tier, which is presently full. So we have Keski here listening in the background, enjoying RSBNB update as it lands with that. So definitely do keep an eye out on all that. Patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everybody, for your support. It means the world to us.
Thanks.
Alrighty. Let's do some patch notes, some minor patch notes this week. Mm-hmm. 19 additional Quest XP lamps have been added to May's storage chest that are available to reclaim. You can check the lore, experience, and then Lamp of Luxury achievement to see if you've missed any.
It's good.
I don't know. I didn't get around to doing this before the show this week, but you know, we love free XP, so that's good.
Well, it's
only if you miss stuff, right?
Yeah. So what they did is they took a bunch of lamps. I think in some cases they created new lamps or made existing lamps reclaimable that weren't previously, and added them to the quest chest. So these are all just standard
things
quest
that
rewards.
You might have missed.
Instead of running around to like different NPCs, you can go to one place.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. They adjusted the click box on the fallen palm tree at the Hetz Oasis agility course. We all know that was a little bit obnoxious in the past. Skill pair wise, Nathstroth's skill reset and now is an option to set the chosen skill to the lowest XP value, as that's a primary use case, and clarified the wording of the XP of the option to set the XP to an input value. With this, they also removed the major skill reset option and simplified some of the steps in the minor reset overflow. And would you guys believe it or not that this is actually a way for skill peers and whatnot to go around and actually do some of the quests that reward XP that would be inadvertent otherwise? So you can do the quest and then reset the XP after it.
That feels so janky.
It is. It is. And it's really, you know, when it comes to keeping a character level 3, it's like, oh my god, I have to do so much to make sure I don't, you know, get a level here or there in any of the combat skills. So... like, if you wanted to, you could get access to doing this and reset necromancy after you do the necromancy onboarding quest.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, I was going to say, like, I thought in terms of, like, accidentally gaining XP, I thought we had the ability to block XP in skills.
We have that, too.
Right, okay. But this is a different, slightly different use case.
But they didn't allow the blocking of constitution, right? So even if you were to go and punch something and you had all your combat styles blocked, you would still get Constitution XP for that.
Right.
And that was because of consultations with the peer community for people who wanted to be Constitution peers, I guess.
That seems strange to me.
Yeah, that was a strange cutout. I will give you that.
I don't understand pures. I've never really understood pures, but it seems to me that part of the appeal of the pure build as a challenge run or as a skill run is the challenge in figuring out what you need to what you can and can't do and how you can and can't complete certain things within those restrictions.
Right, like how am I going to do mining without a crystal pickaxe, that sort of thing.
Right, so to me, it seems like having tools in the game that let you take that challenge away seems like kind of defeating the purpose.
But there are also lots of cases of accidents of people, you know, spending years and years on skill pairs and then just ruining them by one lapse. So that's what this
is. Yeah, I mean, there's someone in Clan Quest who did that. They had a combat or they had a skill pair that they ruined with one of the farming seeds that granted strength XP.
Oh, wow.
They didn't realize. So, yeah, I don't know. It's not for me, so I shouldn't really complain about it. It doesn't affect me, so I don't mind that it's in the game. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And that's fine, it doesn't have to.
Yeah, and it's just there, and you know, it's really the culmination of the entire patch notes for this week. So alrighty. You guys ready to make some waves?
Wrapped in.
Hang 10.
Throw the switch.
There's a new Treasure Hunter promo in the Crystal Capsules.
Canceled.
God have mercy on our souls.
It's the upgraded Shadow Gem Pernix Armor Override that's available. You get the Shadow Gems, and just like with the Necromancy one that happened earlier this year, you're able to, in effect, buy the pieces of the outfit in the order that you want. And I have to say, this armor looks really, really good.
It looks pretty good. It's expensive.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Like, I was anticipating something coming up in the next Treasure Hunter promo, so I've been buying out the daily keys for a couple of days with the oddments.
Mm-hmm.
Not putting real money, just with my oddments, because I have tons of oddments that I never use. And I think I had something like 60 odd keys today, and I think I have 9 gems.
Yeah,
so that's like one piece.
I did 13 keys yesterday with oddments plus the 3 dailies, and I got 2.
Yeah. So there, it's expensive and rare.
Yeah. And you know, I feel like this is something, again, you're always you damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing, because this is what people have always been asking for with Treasure Hunter. They've been asking for these cosmetic things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I hope they sell well, because I'd rather have this than other XP related things on there.
Yeah.
Another thing
that's worth noting, well, I guess two other things that's worth noting. One of them is that this isn't an override. This is, well, there might be an override associated with it, but this is an equipment piece.
Yeah.
It does have stats.
Yep. It has stats. It's not a cosmetic override. Now, granted, like Virtus isn't game breaking, so
no.
Like technically this is buying power, but like, come on.
No, it's from 2011 at this point.
Yeah, it's good, but especially for, I guess it's magic armor. Magic armor is expensive, but yeah, it's fine.
Is it augmentable? I didn't look into that.
I don't know. That's a good question. Or actually, no, sorry. I'm looking at the Virtus, but no, this is the Pernix armor. So yeah, like tier 90 ranged armor is really inexpensive. So this isn't.
Are you sure? Because it says on the wiki, the Shadow Gem Pernix outfit is cosmetic override.
I could be wrong, because I realized I was looking at the Virtus by mistake.
Yeah, I think it's just a cosmetic override.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you might be right. Okay. Okay, never mind.
So
take back.
But one thing that they did do with this is that they updated the look of the original Pernix to match the yep. modern look. And I feel like that has been a case where the community is 50-50 on this.
And also, they gave you the retro override for quote unquote,
for free whenever you equip a piece of Pernix.
Yeah, so if you equip the Pernix cowl, you get a free cosmetic override of the retro Pernix.
Which I think is the true story of this promo is that they updated Pernix armor because of this Treasure Hunter promo, but they're also making it so that people who want the, you know, the more traditional look aren't left out in the cold.
Yeah, and you get it, you don't have to buy it. They just give it to you. You have to buy the armor, but
yeah, I mean, obviously, and I mean that's probably cheap enough.
Or have the armor already.
Yeah, and that's probably cheap enough in this day and age, I'd say. What does Pernix go for anyways here?
Probably not much.
No.
Well, actually, I don't know, because Pernix is
tier 80.
Priscilic Essence is going to be
right.
dropped up
yeah. Okay.
for that reason.
Next
so
forever.
Actually probably fairly expensive.
Pernix body, 36 mil.
Yeah, full armor set, 87 mil for the full set. Or 78 if you can get the set box.
Yeah, so there it is. Whatever. There it is being propped up, like you said, by Masterwork and whatnot. But,
yeah.
You know, as we always say, if you have the money to go for it and you like this kind of promo, speak with your wallet, buy keys, use them on this if this is something that you like. And if you don't. It's as simple as that. But
yep.
I like that they're doing this. It's not necessarily my colors, so to speak, but I like the way that it looks is how I'd describe it. So. Yep. Okie dokie, folks. That brings us pretty much near to the end of the program. This week, we do have a few achievements to go through. We have Ozozoyo with 120 Hunter. On the 24th, as well as 200 million defense, Luke Totodile got 120 agility, and Balbazard got 120 invention on April 20th.
Also on April 20th, Godin got 120 divination. April 18th, Bellicosity with 99 mining and smithing. Good combo. And closing us out, April 18th, Z with 120 woodcutting.
Right on. I also do want to mention that we've been talking about for a few weeks in the past the RuneScape cookbook, and something that has actually been started. Well, starting the day we published this episode, Clan Quest's cook-off for the RuneScape themed foods. And we're going to try and work some of this stuff in from the cook-off and the RuneScape cookbook into the podcast at some point. So this is your invitation to go participate in Clan Quest's RuneScape cook-off. I'll throw a link into the Clan Quest Discord, and then you'll make your way over to the Share Your Creations channel, or I'll just try and link that and see if I can link a direct Discord message into the show notes. But it's open to everybody, clan members and non-clan members alike. So if you'd like to take part in that, go sign up. You'll be given a recipe. And then, Zerdones, you've been a part of these before. Are you taking part in this one?
Oh, absolutely. I love these. These are a lot of fun.
Yeah. So so basically, correct me if I'm wrong on this, you got, I think it's probably, it's like 3 to 4 weeks you got to cook the thing and then it's all judged at the end?
It's not judged. So the way it works is the sign up has been posted. So you sign up by reacting to a Discord message with an emoji. You can also, there's a bunch of optional reactions you can do for if you like cooking fish, if you do spicy foods, if you have vegetarian requirements, you can do that, or you can specify that. If you want to make a drink, that's a new one for this one. Like if you just want to make an alcoholic beverage, that's an option. If you're worried about skill level or you're worried about ingredients, you can react to be assigned a simpler recipe. On the flip side, if you want to push yourself, or if you feel like you're more, want to play with more interesting ingredients, more creative ingredients, or if you just want a greater challenge, you can specify that as well. Darkest, who organizes these through Clan Quest, she's great at assigning recipes. And if she assigns you something that you don't like or can't do for whatever reason, she's very good about reassigning. Like, it's about having fun. It's not about, yeah. No one's here to force you to do something you don't want
to do. To criticize your cooking. It's not going to turn into kitchen nightmares.
No, the point of this is very much to share the cooking process, share the output, share the journey.
And these are going to be from the RuneScape cookbook this time.
Yes. So she has bought the cookbook. They're going to be assigned from the cookbook. Final sign-up day, I have the page open. Final sign-up is May 3rd. Dishes will be assigned on that day, and dishes will be due on June 3rd.
Yeah, so you got about a month to cook it.
Yep.
But
so you can post pictures of the cooking process, you can discuss in the channel, and then at the end, you post your pictures and just discuss. There's no judging, it's just sharing what we've made.
And the reason, and you know, I actually was talking to Dark about this, and I figured, yeah, let's talk about the cook-off. Let's talk about the cookbook on the show at some point. And I thought, what better way to do that than work the cook-off into the show this week and share the cook-off with the community here? Because I know there's people who sign up who are non-Clan Questers already, so it's just an extension of that. So discord.clanquest.org is the quick link to get into the Discord if you're interested in that. But we'll have full links to that and the cook-off thread over at update.show. Alrighty, Tanis, pick of the week time. You had a similar pick in 2017, but it's time to go back on this one now.
Yep. So I'm a fan of the Tekken series, fan of fighting games in general, and there's a new Tekken out, Tekken 8, and it's a lot of fun. I have been enjoying
it. I have to ask you again, or sorry, I'm sorry for interrupting you. Last time somebody had a game on the podcast for Pick of the Week, why does it have mostly negative reviews again?
It does?
Yes. Well,
I don't know. I guess
people are weird.
I mean, I guess I'm just a filthy casual that enjoys mainstream things.
No, and I mean that's the whole thing about Pick of the Week. It's what you enjoy and how you feel about it. Who cares what everybody else says? But I just had to point that out.
Yeah, I was wondering if you
would have seen anything on that.
No, I didn't, but it's just something that, like I said, I've always liked the series, and so when I saw it came out, I picked it up, and I enjoy it. I don't find it, like, I don't know.
So it's not riddled probably, with bugs or anything like that?
No, I mean, it's probably, like, fighting game purist.
Okay.
Yeah. If anything, my guess is, it's too easy or something like that. I don't really know.
And it's on sale right now.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, I enjoyed the story mode. There's a a story to it, and then each character,
which is interesting with a fighting game. Now that you mention it,
right? And each character
fighting games
you can
always had stories, but sorry,
but you can like run through. Each character and, you know, get their ending to it or whatever. And it also has like an arcade quest where it's like you and your friends, and it's like you're an tournament
like
and stuff. Yeah, esports. Yeah. So like you'll go up to like a machine and, you know, you're like two arcade machines and you face off. And so that's fun. You go around to different arcades kind of, you know, like do a circuit. Tons of customization. Oh, you know what? I bet the negativity might be coming from microtransactions, which I haven't.
That would do it.
Yeah, I haven't interacted with at all, because I bought like the deluxe or ultimate or I don't know, the expensive one. So I'm like, yeah, screw microtransaction. I'm not putting. You know what I mean? That's probably it. Because there is so much customization. Like sometimes I have to really look and see if I can figure out who the player is, right? Because there's so many different ways to dress. But yeah, I mean, I like it. I guess I'm picking. Yeah, I'm going against the grain.
That's perfectly okay. That's perfectly okay. I mean, you like you mentioned, you have a history for fighting games. You like them, mm-hmm. And from what I know, they're not my cup of tea. But I do know that that Tekken is very huge in the fighting game franchise.
Yeah. So I mean, if you like fighting games, if you like Tekken, I mean, this one's really good. I mean, it's just an extension of where they were with 7, only, you know, broadens it out and expands. I've even won a few ranked matches.
Oh,
who thought? Nice. I know. I was shocked. I'm like, hell yeah.
Nice. And I assume it's good accessibility wise for you too then.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because a lot of people with, or you know, a lot of people that I run into through work and stuff, a lot of us play fighting games. So I think there's something to the simplicity of the side scroller and not having to see.
Because you're kind of only worried about one plane of movement. Is
yes, yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's anecdotal, but I see it a lot, right? I'll run into somebody and we'll start talking gaming and say, well, you like, well, I like fighting games. Oh yeah, me too. You know, like it's kind of seems to work that way.
Nice, nice, nice. All right. What have we been doing in RS? I assume we've just been upgrading our ritual sites, but Zerdones, any fun business you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, so I was upgrading my ring. I think the last few times I've been on the show, I think it's been pretty clear that I've been kind of struggling for a long-term goal in the game. And I hit upon one against my better judgment.
I know where this is going. I saw the Discord this week.
Yeah, you saw what I've been posting.
Ooh, yeah.
I am working on Golden Reaper. And so Golden Reaper is all boss logs, except the only thing that's not on it is AOD, all of the chests.
And rightly so.
And rightly so. Well, I mean, it's better now, but even so. But more than that, I'm working on Golden Reaper in chronological order because I hate myself.
Damn.
So I think a couple weeks ago, I think 2 weeks ago now, I got ABD and Calphite Queen, and I'm now working my way through the Barrows Brothers. I'm about 600 kills deep, and I am 31 of 39.
Wow. What's the average for that log?
I'm a nerd. I wrote a program to simulate the drop chance, mm-hmm. like to simulate how long it would take to get log. I ran that a million times. The average that I got was 2,382.
Oh,
with 2,200 Linza kills.
Wow.
And this is just for Barrows.
Just for Barrows. And I put in a limit of, because like theoretically you can go infinitely dry. So I put in a limit of 10,000 kills, and anytime a trial hit 10,000 kills, I just said, okay, call it, carry on. Of my 1,000,000, 156 hit 10K.
Ooh,
so
that's your future.
That's my future. I'm going to be embarrassed
for a long time. I want to talk to you
when you finish this.
When you get to the Telos version of this.
Well, one thing I'm not clear on is how rigidly I'm going to follow this, because I think I'm going to hit a wall once I hit Virago.
Yeah.
Because Virago is very much forced group. Calphite King, you can solo.
You can duo Virago. Like,
in that
you can
vein,
duo.
And yeah, I know some people who can solo it.
It's, have you considered starting group bosses earlier just because so you can start scheduling times that?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, I guess the thing about it is you can get the pet item and then not claim the pet, so you can get log basically whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's something to think about.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's... We'll see, you're
going to become our next big PVM person.
Well, probably not for a while, because after Barrows, I go into Dagonoth Kings, and then Chaos Elemental, and Mole, and God Wars 1, and I don't get to anything actually interesting until Virago, basically, which is quite a ways off.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I wouldn't want to do Virago like
Corp.
That.
Oh god, I'm not looking forward to Corp.
Oh, it'll be fine.
It would be better if the drops weren't like 1 in 5k.
Just send them to
Ugh. Why do I do this to myself?
Oh, well, that'll be a fun thing to keep up on. How about you, Evernick?
I wouldn't say anything crazy, and definitely not upgrading my ring, because that took me 3 rituals.
What?
I was in the lucky 3? Single-digit club. 3. I got it before I started considering what my strategy was going to be. Get it.
My strategy is what is the best strategy? Is it just Ungale and just lowest, letting it
lowest level ritual all the speed clips? Okay.
Because it's a random chance on every ritual and bad luck mitigation. I don't know if we know the numbers, but I think the common
is there bad luck mitigation.
100. Yeah, it seems to be 100. I've never seen anything over 100. A lot of people hit 100.
Okay then.
I do like how once you get it, the archivist will permanently stand there and tell you how good or bad you did. So he just stands there and says, "You got it in 3 rituals." And I'm like, "Yes, I did."
Which is you.
I thought he'd continue yelling at you about your rituals, but okay.
Other than that, not very much this week. It's been a little busy just in real life, so.
I love the new ritual site. How about you, Tanis?
Just basically the quest and a lot of time with your pick of the week last week, Shane, the Delta emulator.
Yeah, what platform, what game?
NES and Castlevania.
Okay, of course.
Good choice.
Very popular. Did you get to try it on an iPad?
Yeah, that's what I'm playing on.
Are you using touch or a controller?
Controller.
What controller did you pair with it?
My Xbox S.
Nice. So it just straight in and worked. Perfect. Yeah. I was wondering how that would go.
Yep. I mean, I used the virtual controller at first, but the D-pad is really big and kind of weird.
Yeah, and it's hard to know with like a traditional D-pad if you're pressing it without getting the haptic feedback on it.
Yeah, so... I switched to the controller and it's great.
Nice. As for me this week, in addition to the quest and some getting the rituals started to upgrade my ring, I have committed to getting 120 fletching the next double XP weekend and doing the next one after that, maybe divination.
What's your strategy?
You're not gonna like it. Well, some people might not like it. I have a stack of like I have a stack of 8,000 protean logs in my bank.
Yeah,
you do what you have to do.
Yeah, so that'll be a portion of it, and then after that, it'll be something like 12,000 elder arrows or dino.
Have you considered cutting zygomite hair for 300 hours?
I did. I did consider that, but I don't think I want to do that. No.
That's fair. That's not for everyone.
No, and I did that for my own shafts, and I'm getting my own sharp shell shards, and I'll get my own propellant too for it, because the way I see it is I still got, just like 3 weeks left until the double XP begins to have it, so I can just, do that over time and, work that into when I'm not giving myself carpal tunnel by doing agility on Earth School.
Don't forget Dream of Aya.
Right. Right.
Do something with your Anachronia resources.
Yeah, I haven't dumped them in there for a while. I should check on that. That's a good call. It's a good call.
There hasn't been a Yak Track in a while to make use of the space.
Right. Very
it was
true.
So good for that.
Very true. I also just want to direct people again over to the Old School Show for the third week in a row. We're going to be discussing the third week of balancing combat, in particular Magic. And the reason I'm directing you guys over there is not because you want to hear Sirion and myself talk more and you need more stuff to listen to. I mean, you can do that if you want, but it's a really fun discussion in terms of looking at how they're handling their combat system and how they're looking at making balancing changes and making it more approachable without doing EOC. So that's a fun thing that we're seeing. And I don't necessarily know that frame has penetrated its way into the community yet, but that's definitely what's happening there. So we've been having some good fun with that, and we discuss that every weekend, update.show/OS for that. But that brings us to the end here. Hopefully you guys enjoyed our fun little discussions in terms of what was going on with Zamerigal, Vorkath, and learning Billrock's not dead, and learning that, oh boy, there's probably something to do with Zautak here at the end as well. So hopefully you guys enjoyed all that. Zerdones, Avernick, anything else before we go? No?
No.
No? Okay, good. Tanis,
you
good?
Really think you can save them?
Yeah, I'm good.
No, I don't think we can save them. I think we're beyond that, probably.
Until the next lore thing.
Yeah, which will be Daemonheim Archaeology, if not sooner.
There should be a mini quest with Osius. Small.
True. Yeah, probably a small one.
Like Raksha sized.
Yeah.
But maybe. Yeah. Huh.
In any case, if you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and more. Update.show/subscribe. They're all there. As well as YouTube, youtube.com/RSBNB. But we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Avernick Zerdones, thank you for being here with Tanis and myself.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys next week for another one. See you then, everyone. Take care.
Bye. See you.